Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 1 Samuel chapter 4. I'm going to do the entire chapter, verses 1 through 22. I'll call it The Philistines Capture the Ark. Our context is this. In our last chapter, we see the famous incident when Yahweh calls Samuel and prophesies to Samuel that the house of Eli was going to be wiped out. And so we start now in 1 Samuel 4, verses 1 and 2. Thus the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle and camped beside Ebenezer, while the Philistines camped at Aphek. The Philistines drew up in battle array to meet Israel. When the battle spread, Israel was defeated before the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men on the battlefield. Now verse 1 says, the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Yes, Israel had the word of God. In our last chapter, we saw that in chapter 3, verse 20, all Israel from Dan to Beersheba knew that Samuel was a confirmed prophet of the Lord. Well, Israel had the word of God, but they paid absolutely no attention to it. Here's what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. It is not improbable that the rising influence of the young prophet had alarmed the jealous fears of the Philistines. They had kept the Israelites in some degree of subjection ever since the death of Samson, and were determined by further crushing to prevent the possibility of their being trained by the councils and under the leadership of Samuel to reassert their national independence. Well, if the Philistines were worried about the people listening to Samuel, I really don't think they had too much to worry about, because the people didn't sound like they were interested in anything godly at all. All of this is speculation as to why the Philistines attacked. Nonetheless, they did attack. And note, it was not the Israelites attacking the Philistines, it was the Philistines attacking the Israelites. They were the aggressors, the Philistines were. Now Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle and camp beside Ebenezer. Now, why did they go out? There's three options. They could have gone out according to the word of the Lord through Samuel, in which case the Israelites were completely correct. They went out to defend themselves. They were correct because they were acting in self-defense, and they went out through a word through Samuel. I don't think that's probably true. Option number two, they didn't listen to Samuel. They went out on their own sinful counsel to illegitimately defend themselves. They didn't have a right of self-defense. Well, that can't be right. That option says the Israelites are completely wrong, but how are you going to tell somebody they don't have a right to defend themselves? So how about option number three? They went out of their own counsel to legitimately defend themselves. In other words, they were right to defend themselves, so they were right on that aspect, but they didn't ask for supernatural help. They were wrong on that aspect. They were wrong not to seek the counsel of God through Samuel before they went. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says this, at all events, the Philistines were the aggressors, but on the other hand, the Israelites were rash and inconsiderate in rushing to the field without obtaining the sanction of Samuel as to the war, or having consulted him as to the subsequent measures they took. And I think that's basically right. Obviously, they needed to defend themselves. We're not going to fault the Israelites for doing that, but not listening to God, that's another thing. Now, the battle took place somewhere between Aphek, where the Philistines camped, and Ebenezer, where the Israelites camped. So let's look at a map real quick. Ebenezer has got a question mark on the BibleAtlas.org map. In fact, there are three Aphek's, three certain Aphek's mentioned in the Bible. There's one here. We're going to call that the Plain of Sharon Aphek. And then there's one in Asher in the north, right before you get up to Lebanon, on the Lebanese coast there, in the mountains of Lebanon. That is, we'll call that the Asher Aphek. And then there's one to the east of the Jordan. We'll call that the Transjordan Aphek. Well, this is the first one, the Aphek that is, it doesn't state it, but it's probably in the Plain of Sharon. So let's do some geography here. Shiloh, where Eli and Samuel are, is about 20 to 25 miles due east of Aphek. Aphek is right south of the Yarkon River. The Yarkon River is that river that runs into the Mediterranean Sea right north of Joppa. The Yarkon River divides Manasseh, which is on the north, and Ephraim, which is on the south. And north of the Yarkon River, as you go toward the, from the road that runs through Aphek there toward the Mediterranean coast, is called the Plain of Sharon, a famous geographical area in Israel. So that's where Aphek was, and that doesn't have a question mark. They know where that is. Ebenezer, a couple miles to the east, and the battle probably took place somewhere in between there. Now, Gil has Aphek about 10 miles south of there, a little bit east near the Beth Horon Passes down there. And Benjamin, I don't think so. It actually has it. It's all the way down in Judah. But Gil could be somewhat fuzzy on his geography. For example, he said that Ebenezer was 40 miles west of Shiloh. It is nowhere near 40 miles west of Shiloh, at least according to my modern map. He was writing in the 1800s and didn't have the help of cartographers like we do today. All right, so that's where the battle took place. Now let's look at this name, Ebenezer. It wasn't called Ebenezer at the time, as Easton's Bible Dictionary says. It was called Ebenezer by anticipation because later, in a future battle, when the Israelites whoop up on the Philistines, they're going to set up a stone there, and Ebenezer means the stone of my help because God helped them beat the Philistines. Well, that didn't happen here. The Philistines are whipping up on the Israelites. So it wasn't called Ebenezer at the time. It was only called Ebenezer later. Now, for a little preview of what we have facing us, let me read from Easton's Illustrated Dictionary. Ebenezer means stone, quote, stone of help, the memorial stone set up by Samuel to commemorate the divine assistance to Israel in their great battle against the Philistines, whom they totally routed at Aphek in the neighborhood of Mizpah in Benjamin. Same place, but it was later. Near the western entrance of the Pass of Beth-Horon, is actually north of the Pass of Beth-Horon, I don't know, about 10 miles or so, on this very battlefield 20 years before the Philistines routed the Israelites and slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men. That's what we just read about. So this battle is 20 years in anticipation of the victory that the Israelites finally got over the Philistines. And Easton continues, this town is called Ebenezer by anticipation. In this extremity, the Israelites fetched the ark out of Shiloh and carried it into their camp, as we'll see in just a minute. The Philistines a second time immediately attacked them and smote them with a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen, and the ark of God was taken, all of which we're going to talk about in just a minute. And now in the same place, the Philistines are vanquished, and the memorial stone is erected by Samuel. So, I remember in church, I go to a church now that loves the old hymns, and one of the hymns is, "Now I raise my Ebenezer." And I've sung that 1,000 times, and it occurred to me, I don't know what that means. And somebody actually asked in church one day, "Well, what does that mean?" And I thought, yeah, well, what does it mean? It means stone of my help. So raising your Ebenezer is a metaphorical way of saying, I am going to remember how the Lord has helped me win a great victory. We go now to 1 Samuel 4, verses 3 through 4. When the people came into the camp, that means the army, came back to Shiloh. They retreated back 20 miles or so to the east and went to Shiloh. The elders of Israel, there in Shiloh, said, "Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us take to ourselves from Shiloh the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, that it may come among us and deliver us from the power of our enemies." So the people sent to Shiloh, and from there they carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, who sits above the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. Now notice the elders of Israel said, "Why has the Lord defeated us?" The Israelites were too obtuse to realize it was their own sins that caused the defeat. What's going on here? Why has God defeated us? Well, they did get it right. It was the Lord that had defeated them, as the scripture says here. This is the NASB translation. Now, the Holman Christian Study Bible softens it a little bit. The Holman Christian Study Bible says this: "The elders of Israel asked, 'Why did the Lord let us be defeated?'" More of a permissive thing rather than an active thing. I don't see too big a difference between those two. The point is, God was responsible for them being beat. And the reason was, as we know, is because they were sinning. They had completely trashed the house of God and made that which was holy profane in the face of Israel. So the Israelites, having gotten beaten, having lost 4,000 soldiers, said, "Well, let's take the Ark of the Covenant out of the tabernacle here at Shiloh and put it in front of our army and march against the Philistines." Now, why did they want to do that? Well, it could be because they remembered former successes with the ark present. For example, when Joshua came across the Jordan and the sons of Israel marched around Jericho and the walls fell and they beat it, the ark was leading the way. Joshua 6:6 we read, "So Joshua the son of Nun called the priests and said to them, 'Take up the ark of the covenant and let seven priests carry seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord.'" And so the ark was in the front, in the van of the company that marched around Jericho when the walls fell. And we read also in Numbers 10, verses 35, this is when Israel struck out, having stayed a year at Mount Sinai building the tabernacle. They struck out through the Sinai wilderness to the Paran wilderness to the north in the second year of the second month in the 20th day of the Exodus. And in that time period, as they traveled from Sinai to up to Paran, we read in Numbers 10:35, "Then it came about when the ark set out, that Moses said, 'Rise up, O Lord, and let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you.'" If you recall, in the book of Numbers, the ark was always put in the front as they marched. The ark was put in the middle of the camp when they camped, so it could be protected. But when it was time to march, they put the ark front. And so Moses says, "Hey, let your enemies be scattered." He said that at the same time that the ark had set out. Now we look at Numbers 14, 44 through 45. This is right when the Israelites got to Kadesh Barnea as they came up from Sinai in the second year of the Exodus. And they listened to the evil report of the spies, decided they can't conquer the land. And then God says, "Well, then you retreat and go back toward the Red Sea at the Gulf of Aqaba." And the Israelites said, no, we believe you now, we believe you now. So they decided to go ahead and attack after God said, no, I don't want you to attack anymore. They went up anyway. So this is Numbers 14, 44 through 45. But they went up heedlessly to the ridge of the hill country. Neither the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord nor Moses left the camp. So this was a rogue, rebel bunch of Israelites that did this without the Ark. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down and struck them and beat them down as far as Hormah. Hormah means destruction. So here the Israelites were defeated because the ark stayed in the camp. And the implication of that is if the ark had gone with them, they would have won. So there was in the mind of the Israelites, this ark is a big deal. Now, it could have been the Israelites were not taking the ark because of previous military successes with the ark present. It could be they were being influenced by their pagan neighbors who believed in national deities. And so they thought that these national deities would especially exert themselves for any nation that worshiped those national deities. And so this was just like a pagan army would carry an idol in front of them. For example, the Philistines carried Dagon with them when they fought. So maybe they were just imitating their pagan neighbors. But in my humble opinion, it seems to me they were using the ark superstitiously. It's true they had won before with the ark, but before those Israelite victories were accompanied by faith in Yahweh in addition to the ark. Here, the Israelites have the ark, but no faith in Yahweh, and that's going to explain why they get their rear ends thumped by the Philistines. God doesn't believe in superstition. Superstitiously carrying that ark is not going to win the battle. Now, notice in verse 4 that the people, that's the army, somebody from the army sent to Shiloh. They had to go, it's 15, 17 miles or so to the west, so it was a good ways. And then from Shiloh, from there they carried the ark back to the army, which was at Ebenezer. And it says the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were with the ark. We can speculate that Hophni and Phinehas took the ark out of the tabernacle and gave it to the Israelites because, after all, they were priests. John Gill offers that. Now, this Ark of the Covenant that Hophni and Phinehas carried could also be called the Ark of the Law because covenant is another word for the law, the Ark of the Mosaic Law, which was, of course, in the ark itself. And it was a symbol of the divine presence. So basically, the Israelites are saying, God is with us. If God is on our side, how can we be defeated? We go to 1 Samuel 4, verses 5 through 7. As the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout. Now, this is the military camp back near Ebenezer. As it came, the Ark came from Shiloh into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout so that the earth resounded. When the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, "What does the noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews mean?" Then they understood that the ark of the Lord had come into the camp. The Philistines were afraid, for they said, "God has come into the camp." And they said, "Woe to us, for nothing like this has happened before." Now the camp of the Israelites near Ebenezer had to be close enough to the Philistines for the Philistines to hear the shout. So we assume that Aphek and Ebenezer, as the map shows, are fairly close to one another. And so it's not surprising the Philistines could hear what was going on. Now, this shout showed that the Israelites were very confident of victory. As Adam Clark says, quote, "Their shouting proved both their vanity and irreligion." They were cocky. They were not really confident. They were cocky. Now, of course, the Philistines, when they heard this, they said, "What does this mean?" They were confused because shouts were generally for two things. Just before a battle has begun, "Let's go charge them, boys." Yay, they start yelling. And then you hear a lot of shouting when a victory is obtained. Well, neither one of those things happened. There was no battle that's about to be begun. The battle was already over. And there was no victory on the part of the Israelites. They lost the battle. So what are they shouting for now? The Philistines asked. And then in verse 6, they understood. Then they understood that the ark of the Lord had come into the camp. Well, how did they know that? John Gill says it's unlikely that deserters from the Israelites went over to the Philistines and told them. No, that's not what happened. I think Gill is right. What happened was is that when the shout went up, the Philistines sent spies over to the Israelite camp to see what's going on. That's easy to do, and that's done all the time in military situations. Now, the Philistines were afraid. They said, God is coming to the camp. They had some superstitious idea of the Israelites, the same superstitious idea of the Israelites that the Israelites had of the Philistines, probably, of the other pagan nations, that a nation carries God in front of them, and, oh, that's trouble. But this particular God was Yahweh, and they knew about Yahweh. He was famous. He'd wiped out the Egyptians. So they said, we've got trouble now. Now, the Philistines said, God is coming to the camp. That's the NASB translations. Other translations have gods, little g gods, plural, instead of capital G gods, singular. For example, 1 Samuel 4:7 in the Holman Christian Study Bible says, they panicked. The gods have entered their camp. Well, I didn't check it out, but I'm sure it's because Elohim, the plural for El, the plural for gods, can either be translated as God or can be translated as gods. It can either be translated as capital G God singular or little g gods plural. Either way, it doesn't matter. The point is, the Philistines thought that a divine being, whether the true Yahweh or some other divine being, had entered into the camps of the Israelites, and there was going to be trouble. Now, the Philistines said they were afraid because nothing like this had happened before. What were they referring to, nothing has happened like this before? They could have thought that the ark had never been in front of the camp of Israel during a battle. Now, if the Philistines thought that, they were wrong, because, like Jericho, for example, the ark had been carried by the Israelites, so that's probably not it. I mean, they could have been ignorant, but I don't think so. Could have been there was no shouting before. There's no shouting when you lose a battle. They just lost the battle. What are they shouting for? They could have been talking about in general defeated armies don't do that. Also, nothing like this has happened before. The before could have referred particularly to the defeated Aphek, which had just happened. Nothing like this happened the other day at Aphek. I don't think that's it. Option number 3, nothing like this has happened before, meaning before we Philistines fought with Israel, but now we Philistines are fighting with the God of Israel. I think that's what it refers to. We're fighting God now. 1 Samuel 4, 8-11. Woe to us! Who shall deliver us? This is the Philistines continuing to lament. Who shall deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods who smote the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. It's interesting to me that the NASB, after having translated God is coming to the camp in verse 7, now we go down to verse 8 and they switch to little g, plural gods. But at any rate, who shall deliver us from the hands of these mighty gods, the Philistines say. These are the gods who smote the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. Take courage and be men, O Philistines, or you will become slaves to the Hebrews, as they have been slaves to you. Therefore, be men and fight. So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated, and every man fled to his tent. And the slaughter was very great, for there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. And the ark of God was taken by the Philistines, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. Now, why do the Philistines call this God that's in this ark mighty gods, plural? Because actually, it was only one God. Well, option number one is they're using their own heathenish language, as if the Israelites had many gods. That's the way they were used to thinking, and so they said that, even though it wasn't accurate. Maybe they just couldn't understand the concept of one God, so they said gods. But another option, it's a textual variant. As John Gill says, the Syriac and Arabic versions have it in the singular. Adam Clark says it should be translated in the singular. So it's either a textual variant or the Philistines just didn't understand what they were talking about. Now, in verse 8, the Philistines say, oh, he has smote the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. Well, that's the 10 plagues of Egypt, but they didn't happen when the Israelites were in the wilderness. They happened when the Israelites were in Israel, so that's a problem. Now, the easiest way to explain that, the Philistines were confused as to the exact details, things that got garbled as the details of the Exodus had passed through the centuries. After all, we're talking now about 400 years later or so, maybe 300 years, 350, I don't know, somewhere, several centuries later, and maybe the details got garbled. One commentator states that actually, if you just look at the last plague, when Pharaoh was drowned in the sea, that the wilderness of Etham there, on either side of the Sea of Reeds, the Red Sea, that part of the Red Sea, which is called the Sea of Reeds, there was a wilderness on both sides. And so, yeah, the Egyptians did die in the wilderness. The problem with that is it says all kinds of plagues. That sounds like the 10 plagues, which didn't all happen in the wilderness. So I said the easiest way to explain that is the Philistines were confused. It doesn't matter. It's a minor detail. Now, in verse 9, the Philistines say to themselves, "Take courage, be men, or you will become slaves to the Hebrews as they have been slaves to you." Well, when had the Hebrews been slaves to the Philistines? Recall the story of Samson. Samson was a slave, and the Philistines were dominating them. Samson, of course, was in the period of the Judges, which is roughly between 1050 and 1350. We are now in the time of Samuel, which is about 1050 or so. Now, it's ironic in verse 10 that Israel lost 30,000 soldiers. Without the ark, they lost only 4,000. With the ark, they lost 30,000. So, a superstitious use of the ark did them no good. Now, there's a question. Does this 30,000 mean 30,000 total with the first loss, the second loss? Or is it just 30,000 at the second defeat? Most of my commentators say it's 30,000 at the second feat, so the total is 34,000, not a collective total of 30,000 for both defeats. So we'll say 34,000, and most of the commentators actually don't even mention it. I just wondered about it. Notice these 30,000 that were lost were foot soldiers. That's because Israel did not have any cavalry. They did not have any chariots, as the pulpit commentary says. Now, the ark was taken. There were two results from this horrible event. First of all, the Israelites were punished for their sin, and we've been emphasizing that, but also, that's the bad news. The good news is the pagan Philistines were about to experience the power of the true God. That's going to be the worst mistake they ever made, was capturing that ark. Now, typically, pagan nations, they love to capture each other's idols. If you read foreign policy in the ancient Near East, back in the old Assyrian and Babylonian empires, and when they fought each other, and Elam, Assyria, Babylonia, Egypt. You stole somebody's idols, that's bad business. You're making a mockery of them. And so the Philistines figured, ha ha ha, we've got Israel's gods, we're in the catbird seat now, but they're going to find out later that they better get rid of this thing because there's more power in here than they ever imagined. We go to 1 Samuel 4, 12 and 13. Now a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes torn and dust on his head. When he came, behold, Eli was sitting on his seat by the road, eagerly watching, because his heart was trembling for the ark of God. So the man came to tell it in the city, and all the city cried out. Now Shiloh was about 20 miles to the east of Aphek and Ebenezer. I said 15 to 17. I looked at the map again. Let's put it about 20, just to be sure, just to be certain. About 20 miles this guy had to run after a battle. It's a long way, but he can do it when you know that, hey, I got to tell the folks back home, we've just gotten destroyed. Adam Clark says this, "The field of battle could not have been at any great distance, for this young man reached Shiloh the same evening after the defeat." Well, I don't know if Clark considers 20 miles or so a great distance or not, but to me, that's a long way to run after you've just gotten beat. But it's not impossible, so I'm sure that's what happened. He went as fast as he could to get there. Now, Eli sitting on his seat waiting for news as he watched the road. Well, Jameson Fawcett Brown says, quote, "The aged priest as a public magistrate used in dispensing justice to sit himself, used in dispensing justice to seat himself daily in a spacious recess at the entrance gate of the city." So Jameson Fawcett Brown has him at the gate of the city, if that's true, and it probably was. That's different than the seat in front of the tabernacle, if you recall, where Eli saw Hannah's lips moving silently in prayer. He's trying to figure out what she's doing, thought she was drunk. That's in chapter 1. So this big shot Eli, he had two seats, one in the gate and one in front of the tabernacle. He's trembling. Now notice he's trembling. Why? For the ark of God, verse 13 says. He's not trembling for his worthless sons, Hophni and Phinehas. He doesn't seem to be concerned about them at all. But the ark, now that's a different story. In fact, I wonder whether he was in favor of letting it go to start with. I wonder if Hophni and Phinehas showed up and says, "Hey, old man, we got to have the ark because we lost the battle." And Eli said, whoa, wait a minute. I don't think you ought to take it. They said, "We're taking it anyway." Remember, he's an old man, 98 years old. He's weak. Now the messenger comes back from Aphek and Ebenezer and goes into Shiloh. Why did he not tell Eli first before he told the city? Well, it's because he probably saw Eli by the side of the road. Eli didn't stop him, didn't see him, because he's almost blind, as we'll see in a minute. So he didn't see the messenger. The messenger saw Eli, but he didn't stop to tell Eli because the news was so awful. He ran on into the city. I can imagine that'd be a tough thing to tell the high priest. When the city found out about it, they all cried. Why were they so upset? Well, most of them had friends or relations in the army. When you get 30 or 34,000, probably 34,000 people killed, your relatives are going to be in that army. And also, they had lost the ark, which they superstitiously relied on for their national salvation. We go down to 1 Samuel 4, verses 14 through 18. When Eli heard the noise of the outcry, he said, "What does the noise of this commotion mean?" Then the man came hurriedly, the man doubled back probably, and told Eli. Now, Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were set so that he could not see. The man said to Eli, "I am the one who came from the battle line. Indeed, I escaped from the battle line today." And he, Eli, said, "How did things go, my son?" Then the one who brought the news, the Benjaminite, replied, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has also been a great slaughter among the people, and your two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God has been taken." So in one breath, the messenger gives all the bad news to Eli. Verse 18, when he, the Benjaminite messenger, mentioned the ark of God, Eli fell off the seat backward beside the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for he was old and heavy. Thus he judged Israel 40 years. Now in verse 15, we see that the eyes of Eli were set so that he could not see, which is a strange expression. KJV has it dim. His eyes had started to be dim earlier in 1 Samuel 3:2. It happened at that time as Eli was lying down in his place. Now his eyesight had begun to grow dim, and he could not see well. So we already know that he couldn't see well. And here it says his eyes were set. That means they were fixed and immovable, as the eyes of blind men are. If you look at blind people, they don't know where to look, so they just look forward and fix their eyes in one place. Now, this message that the messenger gave to Eli, the bad news, of all the bad news that happened, is the ark of God has been taken, was the last thing he mentioned. So each woe rises above the preceding. He starts out, he says, Israel's fled. Then the next thing he says, a great slaughter. Not only they fled, but there's been a lot of casualties. And then the third thing, and it's personal, Hophni and Phinehas died. Oh, that's bad. And finally, he mentions the Ark of God. Probably wants to save the really bad news to last for old Eli. Now, the fact that the two sons were dead, Hophni and Phinehas, that had been prophesied earlier by an unknown prophet called the man of God in 1 Samuel 2. And in chapter 2, verses 31 through 32, we see that man of God saying this, "Look, the days are coming when I will cut off your strength." He's talking to Eli. "I will cut off your strength, Eli, and the strength of your ancestral family, so that none in your family will reach old age." And Hophni and Phinehas didn't manage to reach old age. "You will see distress at the place of worship in spite of all that is good in Israel, and no one in your family will ever again reach old age." Prophecy's coming true. Now notice that Eli sat on that seat and took it until he got the last bit of news, the Ark of God. That's when he fell off. That's what finally knocked him off his seat. And he died. He might have died before he hit the ground from shock, or it could have been he hit the ground, broke his neck, and then he died. Doesn't really matter. The fact is he died. And some person with extreme curiosity has asked, did Eli go to hell? Adam Clark said, Eli, quote, is gone to perdition? God forbid. No man ever died with such benevolent and religious feelings and yet perished. And I think that really is true. Eli was a good man. He was just weak. He didn't take care of his rebellious sons. Notice in verse 18, Eli is said to be a judge. Thus he judged Israel 40 years. So this is a post-book of judges. Notice that Eli seems more upset about the Ark of God being taken than his sons dying. You can't really prove it here, but he didn't fall off the seat when he finds out Hophni and Phinehas is dead. He was still sitting there when he found out the ark was taken. We go now to 1 Samuel 4, verses 19 through 20. Now that's Eli's daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was pregnant and about to give birth. And when she heard the news that the ark of God was taken and that her father-in-law and her husband had died, she kneeled down and gave birth, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women who stood by her said to her, "Do not be afraid, for you have given birth to a son." But she did not answer or pay attention. Now notice in verse 19, she heard the news that the Ark of God was taken. The author of this book mentions the worst thing first. The Ark of God was taken. Now, we don't know exactly the order that she heard the news, because the author could have switched the events around. But it does sound like the author is more concerned about the Ark of God being taken. This is speculation. She kneeled down. That was a common way to give birth in the East. For her pains had come upon her. That's probably premature labor because of the bad news. A shock is real bad for women that are pregnant. And the midwife said, "You have a son." That's normally a joyous thing for a mother to hear, especially in those ancient times, that a son was born. They were trying to cheer her up. Didn't do any good. She's miserable. We go down to verses 21 and 22, and we will finish up this chapter. And she, that's Phinehas' wife, she's unnamed, Eli's daughter-in-law, she called the boy Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed from Israel, because the Ark of God was taken, and because of her father-in-law and her husband." Once again, the Ark is mentioned first as being the cause of the calamity, as if the writer is saying here, that's more important than the fact that her husband had died. She said, "The glory has departed from Israel, for the Ark of God was taken." Once more, the emphasis on the Ark being taken. Now, why does she name her boy Ichabod? Ichabod means where is glory or no glory. So, the glory has departed from Israel. The glory has departed from Israel. That's what Ichabod means. The glory is gone. Perfect name. This reminds me when I was in the charismatic movement, charismatics would laugh and joke about some false prophecies that were going around. And one of them, a prophet got up and said, "Yea, I am not happy. There is sin in this place. There is rebellion in this place. Yea, even I am not in this place." Which, considering that God is omnipotent and he's there speaking through the prophet, and he's the quote-unquote prophet, and then he says he's not there, that's rich. But there was another one. Prophet got up and said, "Yea, I am not pleased with thee. I am upset with thee. You shall be named. The glory has departed from thee. And so you shall be named Michelob." What that false prophet was trying to say was Ichabod. Anyway, that's off the subject. Now, there's one little issue here. In verse 22, she just repeats what she said in verse 21. In verse 21, she said, "The glory has departed." In verse 22, she says, "The glory has departed." In verse 21, she says, "The glory has departed because the Ark of God was taken." In verse 22, she says, "The glory has departed from Israel, for the Ark of God was taken." Well, some commentators said that it was the attendants in verse 21 said the Ark of God was taken, and she's just repeating it to confirm it, or either maybe correct it by leaving out the deaths of Phinehas and Eli so that she can say the glory is left, not because of Phinehas and Eli. Who cares about them? Just because one of them, Phinehas, was my husband. You take Phinehas away, you're not taking any glory away from Israel, so she's correcting that. That's a speculation. The problem with all that is the text doesn't say that. It says she. I looked at a bunch of translations. It's she called the boy Ichabod, not the midwives. So my feeling there is she's just being repetitious. Perhaps for emphasis, the author mentioned it again for emphasis. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with 1 Samuel chapter 4. Eli is dead. Phinehas and Hophni are dead. We're now ready to go to 1 Samuel 5, verses 1 through 12, and we'll see what's happened with the ark in the land of the Philistines. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope very much that you enjoyed this one.